Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very senior professional and executive and business coach from Canada, Deb Crow. Deb, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be with you today.
Thank you. Deb is an executive and business coach. In her own words, she's a heart-centered thought leader. She is, as again in her own words, an imperfect chief equanimity officer, and she's an executive coach for senior leaders. So Deb, before I get into discussions on coaching, you use the word imperfect several times. Tell me about the background of the use of the word imperfect.
Well, I think that we're all imperfect. I think many of us grow up deciding what we're going to do in our professional lives. And as we move through life and the motion of progressing to be a better version of ourselves, I think we get entangled in that intangible reality of perfection. And my goal in messaging is to embrace our imperfections and, and meet ourselves where we're at. Because if we're involved in elevating ourselves in our own self-development, whatever that looks like for all of us, I think embracing our imperfection allows us to just draw a line in the sand and be the best version that we can each day.
Well said. You know, when I was reading about you, I wasn't sure whether you meant imperfect or whether there was a play on the words, I am perfect, you know. So, yeah, that's why I asked you this clarification. But Deb, let's move to coaching. What made you select coaching as a career or a profession?
I didn't select it. I think it selected me. My schooling is in disability management with a focus in neuroscience. So I was a community-based case manager, and I specialized in people who suffered any form of neurotrauma. So what happened was I had a full caseload of pediatrics, children and adults all over Canada. And it was just so heavy. And then one of the life and disability insurance companies asked me if I would start looking after some executives who were on short-term disability claims from stress. And I thought it would give me a reprieve from the heaviness that I loved, but it would also give me another opportunity to use my skills in a different way for a shorter period of time. But that isn't what happened to me. So I landed up getting five executives. There was three vice presidents and two C-suite leaders, a CEO and a COO. And what happened was they went off on stress. And unfortunately, their stress claim went from a short-term disability claim to a long-term disability claim. And all five of them were diagnosed with cancer. And they became palliative. And I was gifted the opportunity to chat with them and sit with them and hold their hand at the end of life. And all five of them told me the same thing. They said, Deb, I didn't speak my truth. And I was caught in a toxic environment. I was part of the toxic positivity, and I was climbing the ladder of success to the proverbial ceiling. And I forgot about myself on the way up. Please do something about this. So over the next 10 months, I lost all five executives. It was really hard. I needed to embrace the hypervigilance of coming down from that medical world and everything I was exposed to. But I also needed to grieve that I was going to close my practice. And I needed to grieve those five executives. And then I realized I'd been coaching all along. And then I had hired two coaches, one to help me have an exit strategy to close my clinic and look after my staff and do my due diligence to my patients and their families. And then I realized I was afforded an opportunity to carry on the legacy of no longer being a generalist and helping people when they're sick. I decided to become a preventionist and educate and advocate and coach executives that they can endure success with imperfection and get to where they want to without jeopardizing their health, their marriage, their relationships. And that was 12 years ago, and I haven't looked back.
Wow. What an amazing story. And it's so incredibly motivating. I mean, you know, just amazing what got you started. And trauma is something that got you started on the positivity of coaching. Fantastic. You also talk about heart-centered thought leaders. Tell me a little bit about this, and what are some of the qualities of such leaders?
I believe that I was raised to be a heart-centered person. Mm-hmm. I was raised as a Christian, mm-hmm. and my mom wasn't around a lot, and my dad traveled, and I had an Irish nana, mm-hmm. and she always told me that if I give with my heart and I listen, everything in my life will come back tenfold. And I remember hearing that, and I was about 8 or 9 years old, mm-hmm. and it really imprinted in my heart. Mm-hmm. Because anytime mm-hmm. I always say when we're in the valley or things aren't going right, we can always lean back on our faith to have that pause, to embrace that equanimity. So I lost my dad when I was 21 years old. I was in my second year of university. And I remember the day my dad passed away. It was September 13th, 1987. Mm-hmm. But that was also the birth date of me stepping into what I call my resilience. Mm-hmm. I had to do what I could do with what I had in the time that I had it. Mm-hmm. And I grew up really quickly because I had no choice.
Right.
And I always knew that I was a heart-centered leader. Mm-hmm. And I just kept leading from my heart. And so over the next 3 years, from age 21 to 24, mm-hmm. I worked in various jobs because I had to sustain and support myself. Mm-hmm. And I had the worst leaders. I had 4 female bosses who it didn't matter what I did. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, I'm coming in early, I'm staying late, I'm a team player, I'm friendly. And I was being told that I'm too smiley, I'm too verbose, I'm too gregarious. And I used to lean on my faith and think, but I'm being heart-centered. And then I was told that heart-centered leadership didn't have a place, that people would like me if I was heart-centered, but I wouldn't be respected. Okay. And I always knew that that wasn't right. So I just kept searching and leading. And I started my own company at 24, and I'm celebrating 32 years at the end of May this year, 2022. Mm-hmm. And it came to fruition when I learned about something that it's some research that came out of Australia called tall poppy syndrome. Okay. That is what I experienced in my 20s. Mm. So what I did in my 20s, and I'm now in my 50s, so 30 years later, I honored myself, I honored my heart, and I anchored back to, I always can control who I am, and other people who don't see it, it gives me an opportunity to have a conversation, to have that meaningful alignment.
How interesting. But one more question, Deb, for my young viewers and listeners. What is the meaning of heart-centered?
So heart-centered leadership, my definition, is honoring your connection with people. Mm-hmm. And if I can just expand on that, because I didn't allude to some of the qualities. So I have a poster that has 20 qualities that I'd love to share with your viewers. Mm-hmm. A few, I think, of the qualities that are really important is being trustworthy. You have to develop trust so that you can have rapport with people. That honors the connection. Mm-hmm. Attentive listening, and listening to be present, not to respond. Mm-hmm. And another good one is to really hone and honor your character, that imperfection that we're talking about.
Yeah.
People want leaders that are real. And when you can honor your connection with people, you've honed and mastered the ability to not allow it to be transactional. Mm-hmm. The only transaction that should happen with reciprocation mm-hmm. is our soft skills, but not having it be reciprocal that, well, I did this for you. What are you going to do for me? Mm-hmm. That's not honoring your connection.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So my next question to you is about culture. You know, culture, you know, whether it's organizational culture or culture in about of the environment that we grow in, What, in your opinion, is the impact of culture on coaching?
The impact of culture on coaching. Mm-hmm. Can you give me a little bit more specific of where you want me to go with that? Because that I could answer that in so many different ways.
I know. Let me try and clarify for you. So when I, as a coach, work with, say, a culture which is a very aggressive culture, where, you know, quarter by quarter everything must be met, and the CEO has to go and make his press statements, etc. That's one kind of culture. But to use your own words, if it is a heart-centered leadership, then the belief systems are very different. On the other hand, from the country that I come in, a lot of the coaching traditionally used to be done by either a senior in the family or a senior in your organization, and it could be confused as with mentoring as well. Today, the culture of organizations has also become to get a coach for senior leadership. So how does culture impact the work of a coach?
That's a really great question. And we could have a whole show on that, but I'll do my best to give you kind of a snapshot of mm-hmm. my viewpoint of that as an executive coach. Mm-hmm. Every leader has a different way of thinking. Right. They bring a different metacognition, and what's packed into that is their life experience, mm-hmm. their academic experience, their previous mentor or leader that they had to hone their leadership skills. Mm-hmm. So to really honor and be a heart-centered leader and lead what I would call a healthy, vital culture, mm-hmm. you need to have a leader who's imperfect and has a limitless value system on their own self-awareness.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Very interesting. And then comes the other part, that, you know, when you are talking about culture, one is the culture that you have in large organizations. The other is the culture that startups want to be able to develop. And I know coaches who work with startups to build culture. I'd love to get your perspective on how does a startup build culture?
They start by embracing who the leader is, mm-hmm. and the leader leads the culture.
Correct.
So if you look at some of the companies who mm-hmm. have implemented the language mm-hmm. of heart-centered leadership, thought mm-hmm. leadership mm-hmm. into their constitution, into their mission statement, into their vision, it's part of their daily behavior from a startup. Mm-hmm. It's something that's built foundationally from the beginning, so that there's nothing to fix and nothing to waver from. Mm-hmm. Those are the companies that have done it really well. Mm-hmm. They see the leader growing and developing from an idea mm-hmm. to an amazing startup to a large organization. It's a beautiful thing to witness, mm-hmm. but they allow room for imperfection. They embrace their self-awareness mm-hmm. and they honor equanimity and self-care. And when you have that quotient, there's nothing but success that's going to be in the forefront.
Well said. So when you work with people to support them to become successful and fulfilled, what are some of the tools that you use?
Well, I'm a lover of neuroscience.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure like you, I grew up taking different assessments over, you know, the last 3 decades, mm-hmm. but neuroscience has also evolved. Mm-hmm. And I think if we lean into behavior mm-hmm. instead of personality, mm-hmm. I think it gives us a deeper dive as coaches. Mm-hmm. If I can meet somebody where they're at and show them how they think about thinking, mm-hmm. specifically with the neuroscience process of deductive reasoning, mm-hmm. leaders don't have a lot of time to think about things. Mm-hmm. It's either going to be a decision or a delegation. So I spend time in the world of deductive reasoning. Mm-hmm. Executives welcome it because it's a quick conversation. Mm-hmm. and it has a baseline. So when we have a baseline, we know where we're starting and we know where we can grow from. Mm. So that's the space that I stay in. I also believe as a coach, you had mentioned a lot of companies have internal coaches. Mm-hmm. At least I've noticed in the countries that I'm working in, and I'm currently coaching in 7 countries, mm-hmm. an external person brought in really brings a new vantage point.
Correct.
There's a non-biased opinion there. Mm-hmm. They bring a different mindset because they're not attached. Mm-hmm. And again, when we can lean into that metacognition from different levels of executives, mm-hmm. that vantage point or that viewpoint is usually welcomed. And I'm seeing that as a huge trend, especially since the onset of the pandemic 2 years ago.
Fantastic. My next question is that what in your, based on your experience, is the difference between coaching senior leaders and emerging leaders?
Well, from my standpoint, I have to say nothing.
Okay.
Emerging leaders to me also fall in the realm of accidental leaders. Mm-hmm. And I work with a lot of them, but I'm bringing the same Deb Crow to that relationship. Mm-hmm. So going back to what you asked me earlier, yeah. I'm going to develop trust and rapport. We're going to assess where they're at right now to have that baseline, that place to start. Mm-hmm. And the coaching, the only difference is going to be the level of conversation because they are at different levels.
Okay.
But it's the same coaching approach. It's the same listening. Mm. It's the same heart-centeredness. Mm. The questioning and the conversation may be different, mm-hmm. but the process or the protocol is going to be the same.
Wonderful. And would you say it is the same when you come to the younger generation of leaders who are now emerging, which are the millennials and the Gen Zs? They come in with a very, very different mindset with people who may be a generation or 2 generations older. Would the process of coaching or the areas that they need to be coached in be very similar as the senior and the senior leaders?
Well, it's not similar and it never will be because we're talking about different generations and every decade brings difference. You know, we have the emergence of technology and the fast pace of its integration into our homes, into our lives, into how we work, how we think. I mean, you talk about 50 years ago. Who would have thought we'd be where we are now and look at the presence of artificial intelligence in our life. So it's a much different conversation, but I have to say those 2 specific generations that you mentioned, mm-hmm. I do see a little bit of history repeating itself mm-hmm. in that those 2 generations really put a precedence mm-hmm. and an importance to family and work-life balance. Mm-hmm. And I don't like the word balance. I like to say work-life integration. And I think they've really challenged the status quo of the 9-to-5 workday. Mm. I think they work smarter instead of harder. And I think they get their work done, but it's on their own terms. And it's not at the jeopardy of their own health, mm. their own mental health, or the absence of not being with their family. And I find it fascinating and truly commendable from our generation.
I agree. And I completely agree with what you just mentioned. So, Deb, I have time for one more question. And this question is for the many, many viewers and listeners who will listen to our conversation. Based on your amazing journey that you've had and having coached people across 7 different countries, across different industries, I'm sure, what would you say are 3 lessons you would want our viewers and listeners to take away from this conversation?
I think the 3 lessons would be, don't be afraid to mm-hmm. embrace your imperfection.
Uh-huh.
We all have it.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to schedule self-care time into mm-hmm. your daily calendar. And I like to call that white space.
Yeah.
we all need time to think. We all need time to be strategic in our personal life, mm-hmm. in our work life, or running our business. Mm-hmm. And from the medical world, I learned the word equanimity, and it's one of my favorite words. Mm-hmm. And I'm a yoga teacher, so it really aligns with me and my whole self. Mm. Equanimity means really embracing and learning to look at all things in your life with mental calmness and composure. And I think when we allow ourselves to start our day with equanimity and allow it to flow through our day and end our day, we never end our day thinking, what if? We're very settled in the decisions of what we did, what we had to do, and we never land in a space of obligation. And I think the biggest takeaway is to live your life imperfectly and always in a self-directed way.
Fantastic. To live your life imperfectly, to accept our imperfections, not to be worried about or afraid of our imperfections. Deb, on that note, thank you so much for speaking to me. Thank you for talking to me about your amazing journey as a coach, about some of the things that you are doing to coach people from all over the world. And thank you for sharing such amazing lessons with our viewers and listeners. Thank you for speaking to me, and good luck.
Thank you very much. It was an honor to be with you today.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast. Platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.